Geche, Ayaag, Bezendaya, our elders, listen to them. Focuses on personal histories of our Ojibwe elders of Minnesota. This program includes personal historic knowledge of the changes they've experienced in Indian country and beyond. Geche Ayaag Bezendaya includes the changes they've seen due to the federal Indian policy as well as state policy. This program targets villages and communities within the boundaries of the White Earth Indian Reservation and beyond to other Ojibwe reservations in our state. Geche Ayaag Bezendaya, our elders, listen to them.
Clyde Howard Belcourt is a White Earth Ojibwe civil rights organizer noted for co-founding the American Indian Movement, or AIM, in 1968. Clyde was born on May 8, 1936, and he was the seventh of 12 children born to his parents, Charles and Angeline Belcourt, on the White Earth Reservation in Minnesota. This interview was recorded in the spring of 2015. Here's part two of a four-part series.
I chose to go to Red Wing, and I was handcuffed. There was a man in jail. He was called Wild Bill Sinclair. He was sentenced to 65 years for molesting four of his stepdaughters. And there was another guy in there for armed robbery. He was sent to St. Cloud for 45 years for armed robbery. And I was 11 years old. I was handcuffed between them.
Wow.
And they took the one to St. Cloud and dropped him off, took the other one to Stillwater and dropped him off, and then he took me down to Red Wing State Training School.
And you weren't doing anything wrong. You were just being forced.
I didn't do anything wrong, but run away from school. And I was told that I'd be there only for 2 to 6 months, and they'd reevaluate. And when there's an opening at Boys Town, Nebraska, or somewhere. And they tried to put me in Wapton when I was during this period of time, too. And I got out of the bus and I went into the toilet and crawled out the window and ran all the way back to the wild rice camp.
Wow.
And so that's how I ended up in Red Wing.
What year was this that you went there?
I was placed there in 1948-49. I was only like 12, 13 years old.
Wow.
And I spent 3 years there, and it seemed like I could never stay out of those kind of institutions after that. I was judged and incorrigible by Judge Peters, and I've been able to speak before the World Council of Church. I'm the only non-Christian to speak before the World Council of Church in its history.
Wow.
Following Wounded Knee in 1974, I testified before two commissions about genocide. I looked at white European education as a form of genocide, because they don't teach white non-Indians, and they don't teach us about our culture.
Right.
Our history. And that's why we have such a tremendous problem today with alcohol and that. Because our young people, I don't care how much Indian are, they don't have the culture.
And the traditions.
The spiritual beliefs. So I spent 5 years altogether in Red Wing. I was sent parole violation twice, and I was there three times. And then I ended up living in the cities here because you couldn't go back home. It was up to the town council to approve for you to come back, or the sheriff and them made those decisions. So my family was kind of forced to move into St. Paul, and I finally got out of the institution and lived there, and I got in some more trouble there, burglaries and stuff like that. I ended up in St. Cloud, and I was doing 2 to 15 years. I was in there twice, and I became an adult, eligible for transfers, and when I was 26 years old, I was transferred to Stillwater State Prison. And by this time, I had accumulated 2 to 30 years, and I was judged habitual, and that I would be in institution the rest of my life. And I'm in solitary confinement in 1963. I was in solitary confinement. So I had little people like that to look out of. They took your blanket and everything away, and you just laid on a hard cement bench in there. And then at night, they'd come and bring you a blanket. So the next morning, they'd come and take it away. And I was dreaming about doing the rest of my life in prison. I dreamed about electric chairs and guillotines and all that hangings and all that nightmare. And one day I heard a guy whistling, "You are my sunshine." It irritated me. I was laying there and he kept whistling, "You are my sunshine." And all of a sudden I heard him say, "Is there a Clyde Belcourt up here?" I wouldn't answer him. I didn't want to answer. I didn't want to talk to nobody. I thought that's just the way it's going to be the rest of my life. And he just kept talking, I kept hollering. And I got up and I looked through that little peephole, and here it was, a full-blooded Indian. His name was Eddie Benton Benet. Right now, today, he's a 50-degree Grand Chief of the Medicine Lodge.
Wow.
And I asked him, I'm Clyde Belker, and we're looking at one another's eye. And he said, he started telling me a story. He said, you know, he said, I met a caseworker. His name is James Donahue. And he looked at the recidivism of Indian inmates, every Indian inmate who's been in and out of institutions all their life. And now they're here. And we figured that they're in here for the lesser crimes, but they're doing the most time. And doing more time in rapists. Maybe they just broke in a store to get some food or whatever, stole a car, you know. Just doing their life away in prison, but they don't know anything about themselves. They have no pride, no culture and everything. And so we're going to start an Indian education program here, cultural enrichment program, to help these young men like you learn about your culture and your way of life, your history, where you come from, your creation story. Maybe they'll build some pride and you want to get out and do something about your alcohol. Everybody's in here for alcohol-related crime, and they're doing the most time. I said, why are you telling me all this? You know I'm an Indian. Anybody says anything bad about an Indian, they got to fight. I don't give a damn if they're guard or who they are. They're going to have to fight me. And he says, well, I'm going to help you. So he brought me a book called William Whipple Warren, The History of the Ojibwe Nation. And another book he brought me was called Black Elk Speaks. Why are you doing all this? And then he said, I'd like you to meet James Donahue. He introduced me to this Irish, he was a caseworker there. And all the Indians that came into the institution, Stillwater, he became their caseworker. All the other caseworkers, social workers, didn't know anything about Indians, so they give us to James Donahue. And I found out when he was a little boy, he had rheumatic fever and polio, and then his parents used to bring him books about Indians culture. He fell in love with Indians, white, completely white. I said, why are you doing this? Why are you bringing him up here? He said, we want to start this culture program. But we can't do it without you. I said, what do you mean you can't do it? I don't know anything about that. And he says, we're going to help you. He said, the reason why we want you is you always have the best football team. You have the best baseball team. You have the best basketball team. They bring in professional fighters out here, and you're in and people womp up on them. You know, we're boxers. We're in good shape. And he said, you're the guy that does all the organizational work. We need you. They won't listen to us. We need you. And I made a deal with them that they let me out of the solitary confinement and put me in the power plant where I studied. I only had a half a year, 6 months left to become a first-class engineer to run steam power plants and generate electricity. And it takes 3 years to do that training. And I said, you put me back in this honor dorm and back in a power plant, I'll come out and help you. And they did. Wow. There's a warden there named Dr. Moran, and he was the head of treatment. And he came up and seen me, and he said, we're going to give you another chance. And they got me out, and I started organizing. Out of about close to 200 Indian inmates, and I organized, got 100 of them joined this culture program.
What year was this?
This was in, well, I got out in 1968, so this was from 63 to 66. And I got out, and the movement formed in 68. And everything just started changing for everyone. And then we told them that we had to have a drum. And the warden said, well, we can't do that, let you have a drum. He says, we told him the drum was the center of the universe. Wherever you put that drum, that's the center of that tribe's universe. We can't go any further without a drum. And the associate warden said, I'm going on vacation. If a drum should happen to show up on my desk, I guess I'll have to give it to you. He said, but that's going to open the door to blacks who want saxophones and people who want to rock and roll here. This ain't an institution for that, but you guys are going to use it for spiritual purposes, you can have it. So we spent 2 weeks making a drum. I got an old ice cream carton out of the kitchen in Stillwater State Prison, and a conker board around it. Then we took an old leather chamois cloth that Eddie Benton had. He was a welder in there. Soaked it for a couple of days, got real nice and soft. We stretched it over there and tied it up. All this was done in secrecy. In the power plant where I worked. Then we'd put a coal over that night. Nobody could see it. And then finally, when we got done, we put a nice red velvet cloth around it and put beadwork on it and painted stuff on top of it, made some drumstick. And I paid 6 cartons of cigarettes. The mail came into the kitchen part of the prison. And then a doctor, and then they would distribute that mail to all the cell blocks and to the warden up front and all that. We took that drum, put it in a box, wrapped it all up real nice, and put Dr. Moran's name and address on it, and put it on the dock, and then they put it on a cart, and they wheeled it right through 3 iron doors.
Wow.
Up front. They put it on his desk, all right? So he came back from vacation, and me and Eddie got a note. You guys gotta get up here. You won't believe what happened. What happened? He says, come on up, and I'll show you. So we went up to his office, and they had the box open. Here's this beautiful drum. Oh, my God. You know, we got all excited. And he said, I don't know where this drum came from. There's no return address. But I told you, if you should get a drum here, I'm going to give it to you. So it's yours. And Eddie took the stick and walked up and hit it four times. And I went up and hit it four times. And he sang a song, a round dance song. And we shook hands with Dr. Moran and took the drum.
Wow.
Next thing I know, we were building a sweat lodge. And we had a traditional powwow twice a year there. Now they're all over America. Almost every institution, federal and state, they have a drum. Women, too, they have a drum and they have a sweat lodge. And Eddie Benton went on to become the Grand Chief of the Three Fires Society, which I belong to. I'm the Chief of the Ogichida, or the Warrior Society, within that lodge. And that just turned my whole life around. And I figured out, as soon as we got these people going about their culture, all of a sudden they're studying to be dental technician. They all went into AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Dale Carnegie course, and public speaking, and we joined all that. Became some of the top speakers. Competed against people that were mayors doing prison time, competed and beat them all. Everything we did, we excelled. Young people went back to school, got their GED, taking correspondence courses out of the University of Minnesota. John Poupart, who was in there for manslaughter, got out. Went to Hamline University, went on to Hartford, and come back with a doctorate degree. Became the head of the Division of Corrections for the whole prison system here in Minnesota. So we figured it in there. If we can do this and help people in jail to get their life together and shorten the time from 6 years all the way down to 3 years and 2 year period of time, then we should be able to do this on the street. So we came out with that belief and everything and that spiritual, technical skills and learning that we went through. We came out, we were going to change the world.
Sure.
But the old guard, you know, the old guard that was running the Indian Center and the Upper Midwest American, the Twin City Chippewa Tribal Council, they didn't want a couple of ex-cons coming out there and telling them what they had to do. So based on that we said, well, hell, we're not going to battle our own people. We'll form our own organization. And we simply call it the Concerned Indian American Coalition. But after we formed, after 6 months of organizing throughout the community, we only had about 80 people show up, and most of them were women and children. I was a first-class engineer at that time, working for Northern States Power Company. First ex-convict and the first Indian that ever worked for a major corporation in Minneapolis. I could have went back to school. They're opening up these nuclear power plants in Monticello and down by Prairie Island. And that's all I had to do was go back to school for 5 years and I could become a nuclear engineer.
Wow.
You know, but the movement formed. And I always laugh about it. I said, the movement saved my life because I'd have been one of the major polluters in America today had it not been for them.
If you'd like to hear more, feel free to visit www.nijiradio.org.
Funding for this program has been made possible through a grant from the Legacy, Art, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.